Live. This is John Rush.
All right, we got a short segment here before we get our next guest on, but I was going to ask Greg the question, too, of that I asked Richard Battle when it comes to, you know, just our, you know, our grit of today. Do we have people in today's world in the United States of America that would do the same things our founding fathers did? Do they have that same grit? And you know, one step further, you know, a lot of these folks that complain about the things that are going on in this country have probably never set foot outside of this country, Greg.
Yeah, that's right. So it's easy to be critical of something that you've, you know, grown up in, and grass is always greener on the other side. But I tell you, if you go live in another country for
which
a year
done.
Or two, I've lived in Southeast Asia for 2 years, and you try and traveled around. So I got to go visit, you know, a lot of different places, people living on dirt floors. And you see that, it's tough. It's tough out here. And these people are gritty, and they're thankful for just when you have to get up every morning and walk 2 miles to get dirty water to bring back to your house to boil, makes you appreciative of
the tap.
You have the tap and, you know, water that's safe to drink out of your tap. You know,
right.
It's not that much different, I think, than the food industry. Less than 1.5% of Americans now are in food production. So people don't
only
really
1.5%.
Appreciate. They don't really appreciate how much work goes in.
No, they go to the grocery store and pick up what they want.
And that's why our country is really deficient on food waste. We waste a lot of food. It's food that we actually brought home and wasted in our house. That's where it's then in the landfill. But my point is, we don't really appreciate things that come easy to us. And freedom has come easy to us because for 250 years we've been a free sovereign nation.
Right.
And no one's ever tried to take it away by coming in and trying to take away our rights.
Well,
now we're kind of imploding internally because of this robust discussion about, you know, what's truth and what's not truth. But I think that if people are so critical of this country, please leave it for a while. Go somewhere.
Go visit someplace else.
Go
for
visit
a little
somewhere
bit.
Else. Go live in South America, Central America. Go live in Venezuela.
China.
Go live in Colombia. Go live in China. Go live in North Korea. Can't get in North Korea. Okay, live in South Korea. I don't care. Just go live somewhere else and view your country for 24 months from the outside looking in. And then come back and you'll say, you know what? It's not perfect, but it's the best there is.
You know what? I can't add to that. I'll leave it at that. Bruce in from Barber's Foods, and we got a couple of minutes here in this last segment here where we're going to talk a little bit more about food and recipes and so on. And I want to add something to this, though, and I realize that, yeah, there's a lot of countries around the world where, yeah, you've got the freedom to, you know, cook and eat the things that you want. I will also say that there's a lot of countries around the world where you don't have that freedom to cook and eat what you want. In fact, in some cases, Greg, the type of food you may want to cook and eat isn't even available.
That's right. You ever had chicken feet?
No, I never
you know,
have.
You know what? Americans eat a lot of chickens. Billions and billions of chickens. And we love the wings. Can't get enough of the wings.
We do.
But we don't eat the paws. So they're all exported to China and Southeast Asia where they're a delicacy.
What?
And they're actually very good once you get over the idea in your mind that you're eating a foot of a chicken.
Okay, so what do they taste like?
They taste like chicken.
But there's no meat there.
They're very fatty. You know that pad?
Yeah.
That pad on their foot is full of, like, it's half fat. And there's a little
so
bit
are they
of,
crunchy or?
How
do they make them?
They boil them and then they fry them.
Okay.
They boil them like we do bratwurst.
Okay.
And then
they
stir fry them with sauce.
Okay.
And serve them, pile them just like chicken wings, and you just pick them up and start eating them. And of course the nails are gone.
They've denailed them.
Yeah, so you're not eating that because you'll scratch your face. Go ahead. But anyway, my point is that, hey, it's a good thing that we export stuff around the world that we don't eat. Like, for example, with beef industry, the offal, O-F-F-A-L, offal, that's the variety meats in the center, like the liver and the kidney and the intestines.
Yeah, no
well,
thanks.
That's the intestines are a delicacy in Japan.
Oh.
You and I could go into a really high-end restaurant in Japan and pay primo dollars.
Oh.
For beef intestines or pork bung, you know. So it's a good thing that different people like different things.
Charlie, are you listening to this, Charlie? Charlie's shaking his head, no.
Come on, Charlie, you're an explorer when it comes to food. You are. I know you are. Yeah. But.
Okay, what does a cow intestine taste like?
It's very chewy.
I can imagine.
It's very chewy. And even though they marinate it and cook it just perfect, it's an acquired taste.
Why, I guess, is my question. Just what they've grown up with or what?
In Asia, if everyone has ever traveled through Asia, they would attest to this. They're explorers when it comes to eating different things.
Okay.
They'll try anything. They like different things. I mean, you go through the streets and the markets in Japan and China and Korea, and you see kids, you know, off the street vendors eating octopus legs, you know, and they're chewy and they're tough and they're nasty. They're like eating a car tire that's heated up. But they love it, you know.
Oh my word!
You know, and squid and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. You know, you've probably gone into Asian markets and seen the kinds of things.
Old Mage Mart over here,
but they eat a whole variety of things that we don't eat here. So,
Charlie ate cow tongue as a child.
Did you like it? Yeah, actually. So once you skin it and then cook it,
skin the tongue.
Yeah, you skin the tongue off. You take all the taste buds off.
Okay,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
And you.
Charlie says they're awful looking. Yeah,
but then you slice it thin, and then you eat it on tacos. Like, you can go into any taco place around here and eat lengua tacos. They're delicious.
Lengua tacos.
Tongue for, you know, Spanish for tongue is lengua. They are delicious.
Oh, sure they are.
You can get them within a half mile of here. I mean,
really?
Yeah. They're awesome.
Charlie says tongue is huge.
It is, and they make a good sandwich. It's just like this mental block. You know, when I lived in Japan for 2 years, being from Colorado, I had never seen an ocean before. Didn't eat a lot of, you know, we don't eat a lot of fish here.
No, we don't.
We don't.
No, we're
landlocked. If we do, we eat a trout out of the stream once a year, you know.
Right.
But it really was a mental block for me and difficult for me to enjoy
sushi.
Well,
in fact, until travel, you know, got as big as it was in the shipping end of it. Greg, I remember growing, Charlie probably does as well. Growing up here in Colorado, you would know this too. We didn't have a lot of fish growing up as kids.
No, and there were no sushi places.
No.
You couldn't eat poke bowls.
No.
There was none of that.
Mm-mm.
So it took me a while, like 4 months, to get over the fact that this fish is raw. It's not cooked. Once I got over that mental thing.
That's good.
It was delicious.
Oh, I love sushi.
And now, I mean, people love sushi. Oh, my kids love sushi. I love sushi. It. But it's not a mental block for
them. Will you eat any sushi? Or does it have to be good sushi?
I'll eat the cheap stuff. I don't enjoy it.
Me too.
I'll eat a cheap steak too, but you know, I like the high end stuff. But
I'll pretty much eat it.
I'll eat it. You know, just chew on it for a while.
Sure.
Wash it down. You know,
it's all good. Yeah,
it's all food that God gave us.
Okay, before I forget and we run out of time here, chicken. We kind of left the last hour talking a little bit about how to cook chicken, and we said go slow, less heat, and so on. Now, for those of you listening, really, cooking chicken on the grill without some proper things in order is probably not the best way to cook chicken in the first place, right?
Right, and you don't even see that in food service. If it was a good idea, you'd see some restaurant operator dialing it in. But if you go, what do they do with chicken most of the time? They deep fry it.
Right.
But then in a high-end restaurant, they'll cook it. They'll saute it in some butter, some oil, with some lemon zest sauce. I mean, chicken needs moisture, and it doesn't do well on the grill.
Yeah, you don't get a lot of moisture there, do you?
You don't. And if you have a smoker like you and I have,
different.
It's more precision cooking, and you can put it in a pan, and it won't dry out because it's cooking lower. But
right.
But on a grill, it's not great. I mean, most people don't want to take a chicken breast and put it on the grill.
Right.
It's going to dry out.
It's not going to taste right. It's going to be like shoe leather.
It's going to be, yeah.
Joe in Jersey, what's going on, sir?
It's going great, John. So how you doing?
I'm doing well, sir.
Good. I want to share with you some experience. I used to travel to communist China frequently on business back in the 80s, and I want to tell you some of my experiences. We had a factory over there, a joint venture factory, and the deal was we had to pay everybody 50 cents a day. It doesn't matter if you were the janitor or the foreman, it was 50 cents a day, but you got lunch. So I'm there for my first visit and going through the company cafeteria, and lunch every day was some sort of consomme soup. And the day I was there, the protein was little tiny minnows. I mean, tiny, tiny minnows mixed in with rice. So whole minnows. Whole minnows in a cup of rice.
All right.
Were those minnows filleted to get the guts out of them, Joe?
No. These were little tiny minnows.
So you're eating the whole thing.
The whole thing. I don't think they were an inch long. So it was minnows and rice. That was your protein.
Eating little fingerlings there.
Yep. And then we would go to dinner at some of the high-end restaurants, and we would eat things like deep-fried jellyfish.
Mm.
And you know what a sea cucumber, sea slug is?
Yeah.
It looks like a cucumber. It's got these little tentacles on it.
Yeah.
Well, they would take one of those, they would gut it, and they would cut it into rings. They would, you know, just chop it into sections, and they would serve that in the garlic sauce. It was like eating rubber bands and garlic sauce.
Yeah, okay.
Yucky.
Yeah, no thanks.
And then one night we're at this restaurant, and they order a sea bass, pretty big fish, must have been about a 5-pound fish, and it comes out on a Lazy Susan, and they've scored it into little squares, you know, 2-inch by 2-inch squares, and you know, you'd go and you take a square off the fish, and near the end of meal, everything's gone but the head, And the guy sitting next to me, and I'm the guest, he says, "Oh, Joe, come on." You know, and all that's left is the head. And I said, his name was Benny Ho. I said, "No, Benny, I'm full." He says, "You sure?" And he reaches, you know, I said, "I'm full." Couldn't he reaches down. Apparently, they were saving for me the eye of the fish.
That's the primo delicacy. Because you're the honored guest.
And I was the honored.
You blew it, Joe.
Did you eat the eye?
No, my host wound up eating the eye because I was turning it down.
Oh,
I didn't realize that the eye of the fish was, so there was one square there that contained the eye, and he stabbed that, sucked it right down. So for deep-fried jellyfish, sea slug and garlic sauce, fish eyes, minnows and rice, that was kind of my experience to eating food.
Right.
And when I used to go to Cape Cod in the summer, we would get people from Japan there. They would go out at low tide. They would go out with their little mesh baskets. They would bring back seaweed and these big sea clams from at low tide. You would be amazed. They would literally get dinner out of the seafloor at low tide.
Wow. Host John Rush, Rush to Reason, KLZ 560. Greg Bloom, also from Barber's Foods. And a lot of you, you've had some personal questions come in, even for Greg specifically. You are more than welcome to email Greg. You can either ask me and I'll send it to you. You can text me or call in. We'll give you the email address. But here it is really quick. We'll put this up on the website tonight, later as well. It's greg@barbersfoods.com. Don't forget, that's Barbers with an S. So greg@barbersfoods.com. If you guys have specific questions for him, even when it comes to, you know, the sample packs or different things that you'd like to see him put out on the website, what have you, anything along those lines, just send him an email and he'll chat with you.
Yeah, be glad to talk to
you. Sound like a plan?
Sure.
All right. Elizabeth in Superior has a food story. Elizabeth, welcome. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, John. So I have eaten a lot of weird foods in my life. I love sea urchin and sushi and all that. But I grew up, while most of you were having your peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, I grew up with steak tartare sandwiches. And I'd never eaten a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, but I was very intimately aware of the steak tartare. So my mom is from Denmark, and when she would go to the store, she would buy the meat, and she would put a raw egg yolk on it and raw onions and capers, and we would eat that on very thin pumpernickel bread.
It actually sounds good. It sounds good. So it was raw, right? It wasn't cooked, right?
Raw. It's like basically a Big Mac minus the heat, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, raw ground beef, raw egg yolk, salt, pepper, raw onion, capers. You eat it with a knife and a fork.
And did you enjoy it?
I really did, and maybe that's why I love unusual foods. I'm always open to trying something. I mean, in Italy, I've had octopus on pizza. I mean, I like trying neat things.
I've had octopus on pizza before. That was not bad. I'd do that.
It was good. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's not bad.
Here in the States?
No.
Oh, no.
Somewhere else.
Wasn't it Domino's?
Yeah. No, not a Pizza Hut, no.
New topping.
I don't think that would fly really well here.
For Seafood Month, yeah.
I mean, Elizabeth knows me. I'll try a lot of things. There are some things I sort of draw the line at. You know, the fish eyes, I'm probably out on that one. Although, I mean, I don't know. I'll try about anything.
I've had shrimp where the sushi chef puts them on and they crawl around and then he serves them to you afterwards. That was interesting. But he did kill them first. But,
right.
You know, I saw my food moving beforehand. That's
interesting. Yeah.
That's fresh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. That's a good thing, I guess.
That's all about fresh.
Nothing wrong with that. Good stories, yep. Elizabeth.
Yeah, take care.
Yeah, I appreciate it very much. Thanks for calling in and for listening. I do appreciate it very much. Okay, somebody actually texted in too and said that a lot of this person's friends really, they try to buy the grass-finished beef because they're concerned about the GMOs in the grain that's happening at the feedlot. What are your thoughts on all that?
Well, I would ask them first to help me understand why, and I'm not asking this critically. I just want to know, for my information, so I know where they're coming from, why is it that they're fearful of genetically modified corn, which is fed to cattle in a feedlot? Because it all is genetically modified corn.
How long have we had genetically modified corn in our food supply?
Since the late 90s.
Okay.
Since the late 90s. And there's a good study you can Google, the 100 billion animal study. So they researched 100 billion animals at UC Davis. And the premise was, since GMOs started coming into play in the mid-90s. So 10 years before that, and then 10 years after that, they look at the data.
Okay.
The condemnation rates of animals in USDA plants. You understand that in a USDA plant, let's just talk about a poultry plant, there's a USDA inspector, that's a government salaried person in there looking at every single inside of every single bird, the livers, the just to make sure that they're wholesome. And if they're not, then they tag them and they're off.
Okay.
Right. So they compile this data.
Okay.
USDA does. So okay. You'd think logically that once GMOs came into play with a 6-week-old chicken that we slaughter billions and billions of in this country a year, you would see some health issues. You'd see some livers, you know, coming out weird or something else going on with the animal's health, them dying off early. Anyway, just to make it short, this study shows that you don't find that. You don't find any problems with animals that are eating genetically modified grain. So that's an interesting study for people to read. But let's just say they've read that and they're just convinced that they do not want to eat genetically modified, animals that have been fed genetically modified grains. Then I would say just buy organic meats, because by definition, the organic industry does not allow genetically modified anything. And so you can buy organic fed beef. Though it's very expensive because that corn had to be grown organically.
Which there's a whole different process in doing, and their yield is less.
Your yield is less, and it's funny, it's not funny, but they can still use pesticides and herbicides on those crops. It's just a different set. So when you go buy an organic apple or organic anything in the store, don't think that it's never been sprayed with a herbicide or a pesticide. It has.
It's just
a different set of it.
Right.
So, but with meat, you know, eat organic meat and or, you know, if you're not able to find that, then go ahead. Yeah. If that's a concern for you, then grass finished is your answer, because grass finished are never in a feedlot if they're truly grass finished all the way to the end.
Because if that's a huge, to your point, if that's a huge concern, then go for it.
Go for it. There's that option out there for you.
Has there been any studies that show eating meat from a cow that's been in a feedlot with GMOs? Has there been any studies that show that's harmful to humans? Or there's any ill effect on a human?
No studies that show that. But you will find people that are convinced that when they eat, organic or grass-finished beef, they feel better. And it's hard to argue with how people feel.
Right.
So, you know, okay, then you should eat that for sure.
Okay.
But no, there are no studies that I've ever seen or heard of that show that.
All right. So we're also asking the question, what's the weirdest thing you've ever eaten? We've got another segment before a special guest joins us. We've got a lawsuit that happened here in town. I wanted to talk to a lawyer that represented the particular case. I think it's interesting that Greg and I will find it very fascinating. I think a lot of you will as well. But no, feel free to call us. Tell us what the weirdest thing is you eat, or you've eaten, I should say. And if there's a question for Greg, by all means, call us and he'll answer it. 303-477-5.
This is John Rush.
All right, we got a short segment here before we get our next guest on, but I was going to ask Greg the question, too, that I asked Richard Battle, when it comes to, you know, just our, you know, our grit of today. Do we have people in today's world in the United States of America that would do the same things our founding fathers did? Do they have that same grit? And you know, one step further, you know, a lot of these folks that complain about the things that are going on in this country have probably never set foot outside of this country, Greg.
Yeah, that's right. So it's easy to be critical of something that you've, you know, grown up in, and grass is always greener on the other side. But I tell you, if you go live in another country for a year or two. I've lived in Southeast Asia for 2 years, and you try to travel around. So I got to go visit, you know, a lot of different places, people living on dirt floors. And you see that, it's tough. It's tough out here. And these people are gritty, and they're thankful for just – when you have to get up every morning and walk 2 miles to get dirty water to bring back to your house to boil, makes you appreciative of the tap. You know, water that's safe to drink out of your tap. You know, it's not that much different, I think, than the food industry. Less than 1.5% of Americans now are in food production. So people don't appreciate how much work goes in to.
No, they go to the grocery store and pick up what they want.
And that's why our country is really deficient on food waste. We waste a lot of food. It's food that we actually brought home and wasted in our house. That's where it's then in the landfill. But my point is, we don't really appreciate things that come easy to us. And freedom has come easy to us because for 250 years we've been a free sovereign nation.
Right.
And no one's ever tried to take it away by coming in and trying to take away our rights. Well, now we're kind of imploding internally because of this robust discussion about, you know, what's truth and what's not truth. But I think that if people are so critical of this country, please leave it for a while. Go somewhere.
Go visit someplace else.
Go
for
visit
a little
somewhere
bit.
Else. Go live in South America, Central America. Go live in Venezuela.
China.
Go live in Colombia. Go live in China. Go live in North Korea. Can't get in North Korea. Okay, live in South Korea. I don't care. Just go live somewhere else and view your country for 24 months from the outside looking in, and then come back and you'll say, you know what? It's not perfect, but it's the best there is.
You know what? I can't add to that. I'll leave it at that. Bruce Simmons from Barber's Foods. And we got a couple of minutes here in this last segment here, where we're going to talk a little bit more about food and recipes and so on. And I want to add something to this, though. And I realize that, yeah, there's a lot of countries around the world where, yeah, you've got the freedom to, you know, cook and eat the things that you want. I will also say that there's a lot of countries around the world where you don't have that freedom to cook and eat what you want. In fact, in some cases, Greg, the type of food you may want to cook and eat isn't even available.
That's right. You ever had chicken feet?
No, I never
You know what? Americans eat a lot of chickens, billions and billions of chickens. And we love the wings. Can't get enough of the wings.
We do.
But we don't eat the paws. So they're all exported to China and Southeast Asia, where they're a delicacy.
What?
And they're actually very good once you get over the idea in your mind that you're eating a foot of a chicken.
Okay, so what do they taste like?
They taste like chicken.
But there's no meat there.
There is. They're very fatty. You know that pad?
Yeah.
That pad on their foot is full of, like, it's half fat. And there's a little
so
bit
of... So are
they
crunchy or...
How
do they make them?
They boil them and then they fry them.
Okay.
They boil them like we do bratwurst.
Okay.
And then
they
stir fry them with sauce.
Okay.
And serve them, pile them just like chicken wings, and you just pick them up and start eating them. And, of course, the nails are gone.
They've denailed them.
Yeah, so you're not eating that because you can scratch your face going in. But anyway, my point is that, hey, it's a good thing that we export stuff around the world that we don't eat. Like, for example, with beef industry, the offal, O-F-F-A-L, offal, that's the variety meats in the center, like the liver and the kidney and the intestines.
Yeah, no
well,
thanks.
That's the intestines are a delicacy in Japan.
Ugh.
You and I could go into a really high-end restaurant in Japan and pay primo dollars.
Ugh.
For beef intestines or pork bung, you know. So it's a good thing that different people like different things.
Charlie, are you listening to this, Charlie? Charlie's shaking his head, no.
Come on, Charlie, you're an explorer when it comes to food. You are. I know you are. Yeah.
Okay, what does a cow intestine taste like?
It's very chewy.
I can imagine.
It's very chewy. And even though they marinate it and cook it just perfect, it's an acquired taste.
Why, I guess, is my question. Just what they've grown up with or what?
In Asia, if everyone has ever traveled through Asia, they would attest to this. They're explorers when it comes to eating different things.
Okay.
They'll try anything. They like different things. I mean, you go through the streets and the markets in Japan and China and Korea, and you see kids, you know, off the street vendors eating octopus legs. You know, and they're chewy and they're tough and they're nasty. They're like eating a car tire that's heated up, but they love it. You know,
oh my word!
You know, and squid and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you've probably gone into Asian markets and seen the kinds of things.
Old Mage Mart over here,
but they eat a whole variety of things that we don't eat here. So,
well, Charlie ate cow tongue
like cow
as
tongue?
A child.
Did you like it? Yeah, actually, so once you skin it and then cook it.
Skin the tongue?
Yeah, you skin the tongue off. You take all the taste buds off.
Okay,
yeah.
I didn't know that. Charlie says they're awful looking.
Yeah. But then you slice it thin and then you eat it on tacos. Like, you can go into any taco place around here and eat lengua tacos. They're delicious.
Lengua tacos.
Lengua, tongue for, you know, Spanish for tongue is lengua. They are delicious.
Oh, sure they are.
You can get them within a half mile of here.
I mean, really?
Yeah. They're awesome.
Charlie says tongue is huge.
It is, and they make a good sandwich. It's just like this mental block. You know, when I lived in Japan for 2 years, being from Colorado, I had never seen an ocean before. Didn't eat a lot of, you know, we don't eat a lot of fish here.
No, we don't.
We don't.
No, we're
If we do, we eat a trout out of the stream once a year, you know.
Right.
But it really was a mental block for me and difficult for me to enjoy
sushi. Well, in
fact,
until travel, you know, got as big as it was in the shipping end of it. Greg, I remember growing, Charlie probably does as well. Growing up here in Colorado, you would know this too. We didn't have a lot of fish growing up as kids.
And there were no sushi places.
No.
You couldn't eat poke bowls.
No.
No. There was none of that.
Mm-mm.
So it took me a while, like 4 months, to get over the fact that this fish is raw. It's not cooked. Once I got over that mental thing,
that's good.
It was delicious.
Oh, I love sushi.
And now, I mean, people love sushi. My kids love sushi. I love sushi. But it's not a mental block for me.
Will you eat any sushi, or does it have to be good sushi?
I'll eat the cheap stuff. I don't enjoy it.
Me too.
I'll eat a cheap steak too, but you know, I like the high end stuff. But
I'll pretty much eat it.
I'll eat it. You know, just chew on it for a while.
Sure.
Wash it down. You know,
it's all good.
It's all good.
Yeah.
It's all food that God gave us.
Okay. Before I forget and we run out of time here, chicken. We kind of left the last hour talking a little bit about how to cook chicken, and we said go slow, less heat, and so on. Now, for those of you listening, really, cooking chicken on the grill without some proper things in order is probably not the best way to cook chicken in the first place, right?
Right, and you don't even see that in food service. If it was a good idea, you'd see some restaurant operator dialing it in. But if you go, what do they do with chicken most of the time? They deep fry it.
Right.
But then in a high-end restaurant, they'll cook it. They'll saute it in some butter, some oil, with some lemon zest sauce. I mean, chicken needs moisture, and it doesn't do well on the grill.
Yeah, you don't get a lot of moisture there, do you?
You don't. And if you have a smoker like you and I have,
different.
It's more precision cooking, and you can put it in a pan and it won't dry out because it's cooking lower. But
right.
But on a grill, it's not great. I mean, most people don't want to take a chicken breast and put it on the grill.
Right.
It's going to dry out.
It's not going to taste right. It's going to be like shoe leather.
It's going to be, yeah.
Joe in Jersey, what's going on, sir?
It's going great, John. So how you doing?
I'm doing well. Doing well, sir.
Good. I want to share with some experience. I used to travel to communist China frequently on business back in the 80s, and I want to tell you some of my experiences. We had a factory over there, a joint venture factory, and the deal was we had to pay everybody 50 cents a day. It doesn't matter if you were the janitor or the foreman. It was 50 cents a day, but you got lunch. So I'm there for my first visit and going through the company cafeteria, and lunch every day was some sort of consomme soup. And the day I was there, the protein was little tiny minnows. I mean, tiny, tiny minnows mixed in with rice. So whole minnows in a cup of rice.
All right.
Were those minnows filleted to get the guts out of them, Joe?
No. These were little tiny minnows.
So you're eating the whole thing.
The whole thing. I don't think they were an inch long. So it was minnows and rice. That was your protein.
Eating little fingerlings there.
Yep. And then we would go to dinner at some of the high-end restaurants, and we would eat things like deep-fried jellyfish. You know what a sea cucumber, sea slug is?
Yeah.
It looks like a cucumber. It's got these little tentacles on it.
Yeah.
Well, they would take one of those, they would gut it, and they would cut it into rings. They would, you know, just chop it into sections, and they would serve that in a garlic sauce. It was like eating rubber bands and garlic sauce.
Yeah, no thanks.
And then one night we're at this restaurant, and they order a sea bass, pretty big fish, must have been about a 5-pound fish, and it comes out on a Lazy Susan, and they've scored it into little squares, you know, 2-inch by 2-inch squares, and you know, you'd go and you take a square off the fish, and near the end of meal, everything's gone but the head, and the guy sitting next to me, and I'm the guest, he says, "Oh, Joe, come on," you know, and all that's left is the head, and I said, his name was Benny Ho, I said, "No, Benny, I'm full." He says, "You sure?" And he reaches, you know, I said, "I'm full," couldn't he? He reaches down. Apparently, they were saving for me the eye of the fish.
That's the primo delicacy. Because you were the honored guest.
And I was the honored guest.
You blew it, Joe.
Did you eat the eye?
No, my host wound up eating the eye because I was turning it down.
Oh,
I didn't realize that the eye of the fish was, so there was one square there that contained the eye, and he stabbed that, sucked it right down. So for deep-fried jellyfish, sea slug and garlic sauce, fish eyes, minnows and rice. That was kind of my experience to eating food.
Right.
And when I used to go to Cape Cod in the summer, we would get people from Japan there. They would go out at low tide. They would go out with their little mesh baskets. They would bring back seaweed and these big sea clams from at low tide. You would be amazed. They would literally get dinner out of the seafloor at low tide.
Wow.
And that's what they would cook.
More power to them. Joe, as always, it's a joy talking to you. Good stories. Craig in Wheat Ridge, you've got a couple minutes as all, sir. Weirdest thing I've ever eaten. I don't know if weird is the right word, and I actually like it. In Ethiopia, they have this dish called injera and tibs. And injera is this sour sort of doughy bread that almost looks like a burrito with lots of little holes in it. You know, the tortilla with lots of little holes in it. I don't know how else to describe it. So like a sponge. It's a spongy kind of a bread.
Okay.
But it's very sour.
Is it doughy?
It's not, because it's a very spongy, soury taste.
Okay.
Probably the best way for me to explain it. And then they make this, the tibs are like, I don't know what kind of meat it is, actually. It's probably debatable on what they're cutting up. And it could be dog, it could be a cow, could be
just whatever they
buffalo,
have, whatever's available.
Not bison, but whatever's it could be buffalo.
Water buffalo. Yeah, whatever's available.
Whatever's available is what you're typically getting out of it. Now, they cook that for a long time, and they marinate it, and they get it as, you know, as tender as they possibly can, although tender is a loose term when you're eating injera and tibs. But I actually like the meal. A lot of folks that would go over there probably would not enjoy it, but I actually like it. It's spicy. You know, Ethiopians like their spice. They like spicy food, which so do I. And so I get along very well in that world. But that's probably one of those staple dishes there that folks either love or hate, but I actually like it.
Doesn't sound bad.
It's
not like
good.
Some funky seafood that you know might have in Asia. Yeah,
I've eaten some weird. I've eaten some weird seafood over the years, octopus and some things like that, where you were like, "This was really pretty fishy."
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting creatures that God has live in the ocean that we don't even know about. Yeah, but in Asia, they eat them all.
They do.
If they catch it, it's
And I guess I'm one of those guys, and Charlie knows this. I don't really dislike too many things. There's certain tastes I don't particularly care for, but I'm kind of one of those guys where, yeah, I'll give it a whirl. Throw it down, I'll eat it.
Yeah, that's good to broaden your horizons, culinary speaking.
You know, I like different things, different tastes and so on. There's a lot of things that I'll, you know, and there's staples that I still like a good old steak. I mean, that's a staple for me. I mean, that's one of those things where if you want to go to, you know, just anywhere out to eat and there's a steak on the menu and you don't know what else to eat, yeah, I'll order it.
Yeah.
I'll eat that.
Yeah. You know, I'm amazed as I travel around the world that they'll take chicken or beef or the things that we're used to, and they'll cook it completely different. And it's delicious.
Right.
We would never have thought of that here, you know, to do it that way. But it's just, it's amazing.
Yeah. You know, I will say this, too, and this is for a lot of you that maybe don't know this, some of you transplants even. In Colorado, we actually are really spoiled when it comes to Mexican food. We have some of the best Mexican food. And I can tell you that from even visiting Mexico and vacationing there and doing things along those lines and so on. We've actually got some of the best Mexican food in Colorado, as there probably is in most parts of the U.S. And I'm not exaggerating. Maybe southern San Diego, places like that, might be as good as what we have here. But we've got pretty darn good Mexican food in town. So all of you Mexican restaurants that are out there, hats off to you. You guys do a pretty darn good job. We have great food here when it comes to that.
We have a lot of good Mexican food. I agree.
And we're very spoiled, because I've been other parts of the country where you go get Mexican food and it's like, this isn't the Mexican food I'm used to.
I've had Mexican food in the South. I've had Mexican food in Florida. I've had Mexican food in New York City. I've had Mexican food in San Francisco that doesn't rival our Mexican food here.
So I'm not wrong.
Just a local strip center.
So I'm not wrong.
No. Yeah.
We have really good Mexican food here. And I don't know why that is, folks. All I know is this. I've been eating Mexican food as a Colorado native my entire life. I mean, whether it was at a restaurant or my mom just making homemade Mexican food because it's what we did in Colorado, I've been eating Mexican food for as long as I can remember. And I know there's parts of the country where that's not the case.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with immigration and how they settled here. A lot of the greatest Mexican food restaurants in this town are first, second, or third generation immigrants. You know, one of my friends owns 6 tacos.
Recipes. What do you got for us as we head into the Independence Day weekend? By the way, I know this isn't meat-oriented, but there's sort of these challenges lately, Charlie, I don't know if you've seen this or not either, where people are putting mustard on watermelon and soy sauce on ice cream, on vanilla ice cream.
That's extreme flavors that I don't enjoy.
Either one of you try that at all?
No,
yet?
But I wouldn't.
Charlie says no either.
No.
I've not tried mustard on the...
There's just certain foods that don't go together.
I've never tried the mustard
like
on the...
Like milk and popcorn. I love milk and popcorn.
Yeah, but not together.
No, I'll drink orange juice and popcorn.
Okay, so do you, Charlie and Greg, you the one, do you put salt on your watermelon?
No.
Charlie, it does? I do too.
Okay, that's okay. Salt's okay.
Yeah, I do salt on the watermelon. Not every piece, but yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah, I can see that.
Gives you that, you know, two flavors,
basically. Yeah, I get it. If you like salty, you got salty, sweet.
And if you get a watermelon that's not super sweet, you can put a little salt on it, and it actually makes it taste a little sweeter.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, side note.
Well, speaking of mustard, you said mustard. I want to talk about hot dogs, because hot dogs have a bad rap. You know, people that don't know the meat industry, they'll say, oh, everything but the snort and the moo and everything goes in the hot dog. I'm in a USDA facility every week that makes hot dogs. And I've been in, at least 30 plants that make hot dogs. These are, you know, USDA family-owned businesses.
Okay.
And what they put in that hot dog is quality ingredients. They take subprimals, or, you know, meat, boneless meat blocks or trim, and they put it in, it's called a bowl chopper, or it's a fine grinder.
Okay.
It like minces it super fine.
Okay.
And then
makes a paste, basically,
makes
right?
a paste. It looks like toothpaste, but it's not the floor scraps, and it's not like tails and lips, and it's nothing like that. It's wholesome stuff.
Okay.
But what people don't realize about hot dogs is that they're most often these days, because people don't like natural casings. Natural casings, you know, back in the day were lamb, mostly lamb casings, lamb intestines,
guts,
or beef
guts
that are used because of the dimensions and the size to make great hot dogs. You can still buy those in the marketplace. They're actually delicious. Call them natural casing hot dogs.
Okay.
Beeler's makes ones.
Okay.
I sell them. They're awesome. They have a snap to them. When you cook them, they
I didn't
snap.
Know that.
They're delicious.
Okay.
But most hot dogs, like 99.9% of them, have no casing anymore because they are actually formed in a tube that's made out of plastic, and then that tube hangs in the smokehouse, and the tube is plastic.
So that forms it.
It forms it, and it lets the temperature and the heat in and the smoke in, and then they're cooked to make the form. It's a mold.
I didn't know that.
It's a mold, and then they go through a skinner, and the skinning machine is really fun. I'll take you into a plant, let you see.
I'd love to see it.
It's a blast. It goes like a billion miles an hour, ripping the skins off these hot dogs, and they're just shooting across the room into the next machine. It's cool.
Wow.
But they're skinned, and so hot dogs are fully cooked or fully smoked, skinless when you eat them, and you can eat them cold.
Right. I used to as a kid all the time.
You can just eat them cold.
Sure. So it's always good if you want to throw those in, you go camping or whatever, and something happens and you got nothing else to eat.
Right.
You can eat a hot dog cold.
Right.
It'll keep you alive.
Right. Oh, hot dogs are great.
Right.
I just wanted to kind of dispel the notion that hot dogs have...
Okay, so are there better quality hot dogs than others?
Yes. If you're a hot dog manufacturer and you're competing with price, the cheapest thing you can put in a hot dog is chicken. And the cheapest chicken you can find is called the comminuted chicken. Comminuted chicken is the meat that is stuck to the rib cage after they take the breast meat off the rib cage with the machine. There's still meat there in between the, you know.
Sure.
So they put that in this called the beehive machine. And the beehive machine pushes with a corkscrew with immense amount of pressure the meat through a plate with lots of little tiny holes.
Okay.
Smaller than a BB, like 2 millimeter holes. And it gets
so it pushes the meat out, not the bone.
And the bone can't make it through.
Okay.
But so that's called comminuted chicken. And that's what they make the cheap hot dogs from.
I didn't.
They're not very good.
I didn't
know If you saw comminuted chicken being made, you'd probably say, I'm not eating that. I'll give it to my dog, but I'm not eating that. The best quality hot dogs are beef and pork hot dogs.
So like a Hebrew National, are they a good hot dog?
Great hot dog.
It's all beef, right?
Nathan's hot dogs. Great
Nathan's,
hot dogs.
Okay.
Yeah. Good brands.
Okay.
But I'm a favor of the all beef or the beef and pork hot dogs or the pork hot dogs. And, you know, the Johnsonville Brat brand, it's a great brand. They use high quality stuff. They're not, but just read the ingredients, because if you look at the hot dog and buy by price, you get what you pay for. If you're buying a 8-pack of hot dogs for $1, it's comminuted chicken every time.
Right.
Every time.
There's
no beef in there.
Right.
There's no beef in there. If you're buying $4 pound hot dogs, or pack, they're made out of high-quality beef or high-quality pork.
Now, I assume that's where the difference in the taste comes in.
Yes. Chicken doesn't make a great hot dog. It really doesn't.
No.
Do you like a chicken bratwurst?
No.
Me neither.
No.
A turkey bratwurst?
No.
No.
Not really.
And there's other uses for that protein.
Yeah.
Like Thanksgiving, you carve it up and serve it with gravy, but not as a hot dog.
What's the best way to cook a hot dog?
The best way to cook a hot dog, I think, is to boil it, just to heat it up, and then finish it off on the grill. It's already cooked, so you don't really need to boil it, but that's how I like to do it. But on the grill,
yes.
With the grill marks, you get that umami flavor when you start to, you know, brown it up, and it starts to split, you know, I think. What do you think?
I agree, yes, yes.
Yeah, and you know, interesting
thing. That's the one downside about the smoker is they don't make the best hot dogs.
No, they don't.
Because you're really just heating it up.
It kind of leathery. I think the best hot dog I've ever had was off a cart in Chicago. And I think it was because, A, I was in Chicago, and they're known for their hot dogs.
Right.
But have you ever had a Chicago hot dog where they doctor it up?
No.
Oh. They doctor it up with a pepper there and really high-end mustard, and the bun is steamed. And
so it's a meal.
It's a meal. Yeah, Chicago hot dogs are unbeatable. And there's a place in Denver that serves those hot dogs called Steve's Snappin' Dog.
Steve's Snappin' Dog.
Because the hot dogs actually snap when you cook them.
Okay.
Those are Chicago hot dogs. I don't sell this guy's hot dogs, so I'm not making any money off this endorsement.
Right.
He's on Colfax in Colorado, Steve's Snappin' Dog, and Concourse B at DIA.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and he also serves really good burgers. Now, I do sell him the beef. Okay. So
that's fine. Okay. Perfect.
But he sells our beef.
No, so we're getting good beef.
Yeah, and so I have his hot dog one day and then beef, his hamburger the next day. But he sells a great hot dog, like a Chicago-style hot dog.
So is that where he's from or what?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, he's from Chicago.
So he brought that here. And
Yeah. And he knows what he's doing. He's created a—
Greg, I will say this. And I get comments every single time from people that are listening. I probably should look at my text. Here's a gazillion text messages. Folks, I'll get them answered, believe me, as quickly as I can. I will say this, though, and all of you listening know this full well. I've never met, and I know Charlie will agree, I've never met anybody in my entire life that knows as much about the meat industry as Greg does. And I mean that sincerely, Greg.
Well, it's—
I really have
only because I've worked in it. It's not because
like,
I'm brilliant.
Like me on the car side.
Yeah, you on the car side.
You
right,
literally
exactly right
have been in it for your entire life and know it like the back of your hand. Somebody did say that Tabasco on vanilla ice cream is fantastic. Ooh. I don't know about that.
I might try that.
Tabasco?
I love Tabasco, and I love vanilla ice cream.
I do too.
Especially if it's Bluebell. I'll try it.
Somebody said just recently was at a sushi place, ordered monkey brains. Was avocado split in half, stuffed with spicy crab, lightly battered with tempura batter, deep fried, and the spicy sauce they put on the sushi.
Oh, so it wasn't really,
so it really
monkey
was
brains.
Monkey
it was
brains.
Just that what it was called. But that doesn't sound bad.
Okay, one last question before we go to break, and I know because we're running short on time. Somebody asked, what makes the Wagyu steaks so much better?
The genetic ability of the animal to marble past what any other animal can. It can marble.
So it's a special breed of beef, right?
It's a special breed of beef. It's a Japanese breed of beef that's a couple thousand years old, and it has different genetics, different DNA. It's the DNA of the animal.
Okay.
Allows it to marble, and the saturated fat tastes different than another, like an Angus or a Hereford.
And how long have they been in the U.S.?
Wagyu were brought into this country originally in the 50s, but they got real big and popular about 20 years ago, and now they're mainstream.
Okay, so everywhere now.
They're everywhere.
Okay, all right. A minute or so left is all the program. Again, I want to say special thanks to Greg Bloom joining me today, Barber's Foods. You still have time to order for the Independence Weekend, barbersfoods.com. And if there's something that you've heard us talking about today that you do not see on the website for some reason, you can't find it, you don't see it, whatever the case, call them on the phone, send an email, whatever the case, and they'll figure it out for you, right?
You've
got a lot of stuff that's not even on
there.
And
we have an order form that we email out that has more things on there.
Right.
A lot more things.
Right. Because I know personally that there's been times with Greg where I've said, hey, I want X.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I do my burn ends and stuff, I want a special type of, you know, pork shoulder and stuff, and you can get all that for me as well, and that isn't necessarily on the website.
Right. We can get anything that's made in a meat plant and that they save. We can.
So anything that's packaged up, you can...
Yep.
So
I just can't sell a one-off like I already said before. But right. Yeah. But yeah. Yeah. So we'll be glad to email that order form to them or, you know.
Really simple.
Yep. That's right.
Now, those of you that are listening out of the area, and I had this question even come up yesterday, will Greg ship out of state? So I'll let you answer that instead of me.
We do. We ship out of state and we use UPS two-day ground because it makes it affordable. Otherwise, air is expensive.
Right.
And everything does fine to most areas. There's a few places we won't ship. Like, we won't ship to Florida or Texas this time of year. Two-day
ground.
It's
too hot, right?
It's too hot. And it gets there and it's thawed out. Yeah. And it's still cold, but it's thawed out. And we're also not using the styrofoam coolers anymore. You know, the ones that most people throw away. Because they're getting more and more expensive. Now they're nearly $20. So now we use actually a hard-sided plastic one. And we ship with that. So we can 2 day and we ship those. If we get the orders over the weekend, we ship them Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday because 2 day, we can't ship them Thursday.
You'll have it by the end of the week.
By the end of the week.
Right. Makes total sense. All right, guys, with that, we're going to let Greg go. Greg, thanks as always. It's a joy having you. Put an order in, folks. It's barbersfoods.com. Go right to the website. If you got a question for Greg specifically, it's Greg at barbersfoods.com.
Okay.
More power to him.